Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, The Activities of the Pachetas, Text 48. Te cha brahmana adesha madisham upaye mere. Yasyam maha avijnana ajani ajana yoni jaha te cha brahmana adeshan Madisham upayemare yasya mahat avagyana ajanya jana yoni jaha techa brahmana adeshan Madisham upayemare yasyam mahadava jnanat ajanya jana yoni jaha techa brahmana adeshan madisham upayemire yasyam mahadava jnanat ajanya jana yoni jaha Om Ajnana Timrandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, please repeat. Te, all the prachetas. Cha, also. Brahmana, of Lord Brahma. Adeshat, by the order. Marisham, Marisha. Upayemare, married. Yasyam, in whom? Mahat, to a great personality. Avijnana, on account of disrespect. Ajani, took birth. Ajana Yonija, the son of Lord Brahma. Daksha. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. So please repeat. Following the order of Lord Brahma, all the prachetas accepted the girl as their wife. From the womb of this girl, the son of Lord Brahma, named Daksha, took birth. Daksha had to take birth from the womb of Marisha due to his disobeying and disrespecting Lord Mahadev Shiva. Consequently, he had to give up his body twice. Purport. In this connection, the word Mahat Avijnanat is significant. King Daksha was the son of Lord Brahma. Therefore, in a previous birth, he was a Brahmana, But because of his behaving like a non-Brahmana, a Brahmana, by insulting or disrespecting Lord Mahadev, he had to take birth within the semen of a Kshatriya. That is to say, he became the son of the Prachetas. Not only that, but because of his disrespecting Lord Shiva, he had to undergo the tribulation of taking birth from within the womb of a woman. In the Daksha Yajna arena, he was once killed by Lord Shiva's servant, Virabhadra. Because that was not sufficient, he again took birth from the womb of Marisha. At the end of the Daksha Yajna and the disastrous incidents there, Daksha offered his prayer to Lord Shiva. Although he had to give up his body and take birth from the womb of a woman impregnated by the semen of a Kshatriya, he received all opulence by the grace of Lord Shiva. These are the subtle laws of material nature. Unfortunately, people in this modern age do not know how these laws are working. Having no knowledge of the eternity of the spirit soul and its transmigration, the population of the present age is in the greatest ignorance. Because of this, it is said in Bhagavatam 1.1.10, Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagya Hiupadrutaha. The total population in this age of Kali is very bad, lazy, unfortunate, and disturbed by material conditions. Om Gyanam Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeve Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So it's very important to know the laws, you know, of the place where you're living or where you might go. You know, for example, you might go to some different country and you might not know the laws there. And in that situation, you may do some things that violate those laws and you may find yourself in trouble. You know, for example, sometimes people, they go to Arab countries like Dubai, and they don't realize that they have very strict laws about drugs, for example. Many common medicines that, you know, people take are illegal there. For example, when I was in Russia, I got a touch of bronchitis, and I had a cough. And some doctors gave me some medicine, some cough medicine, that had some codeine in it. But that's, I mean, it stopped the cough. I mean, it was very effective. But and if you have to give a lecture and you're coughing, you know, you can't do it, so you need something to stop the cough. But that medicine is illegal, you know, in Dubai. And there was a case where somebody came into Dubai, and they had just some cough medicine with some codeine in it, and they spent 5 years in jail there. So fortunately, you know, I took the time to, you know, look on a website about what the laws are in Dubai, and I decided to, all the medicines that I'd been given, I'm just going to dump, you know, before I go into the country, because I don't want to take any chance on violating the laws, because there can be some severe consequences. So it's the same with, you know, the universe that we live in. There are laws. Maya Jakshani Prakriti, you know, Krishna says, this material nature is under my control, Ishvaram Parama Krishna. He says, I am the supreme controller. So there are laws that Krishna has instituted for, you know, this material world. And if people aren't aware of them, it's no excuse. They're still going to suffer the results. For example, if I carried the medicine into Dubai and they had stopped me and they'd found it, I couldn't say, well, I'm not aware of the law. That wouldn't be an excuse. So in the same way, people may not be aware of these subtle laws of nature, but still they're going to suffer the results. And many of these subtle laws have to do with this process of taking birth again, the process of reincarnation, the idea that there's a soul that transmigrates from one body to another, and the kind of body that you get is going to depend on these subtle laws of nature that people really aren't aware of. First of all, these days there's a lot of propaganda that there really is no soul. They say, the material scientists say, I get a magazine called Science News, so I can kind of stay up on the latest scientific developments. And they had a big article about how in the old days people used to believe there's a soul that's separate from the body, but now scientists are discovering how consciousness is produced by chemicals in the brain, and they don't really understand it, but they're working on it. They're gonna perfect their knowledge of this someday. And this is really ignorance. They're educating people like this, to think that, well, there's no soul, there's no afterlife, and therefore, we can do anything we want. It's like Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, asatyama pratishtam te jagat ahur anishvaram, apraspara sambhutam kimanyat kamahaitakam. So, Krishna is describing there's a certain kind of thinker, philosopher, who believes there is no God in control of the universe. There's just matter acting in its own way. There is no soul. There's no real purpose to human life. We can do anything we like. And the only consequences are the consequences that we impose on ourselves. The laws that we make and the culture that we make. So, but they don't understand there is a higher controller. There is a soul that is going to be held accountable for its actions in this life and in the next. And because of this ignorance, people are guaranteeing a very unfortunate future for themselves. Sometimes, actually, when I was in Russia, I was speaking at lots of universities, and this topic of reincarnation I mentioned in every lecture. And somehow or other, people have this strange idea. This question came up about 20 times in Russia. Like, if you believe in reincarnation, and they have this idea that there's some fixed number of souls, so it's like a big mystery to them why the human population is increasing. They think this is somehow or other, this is some argument against reincarnation, that the population of human beings is increasing somehow. But I explained to them the earth is not a closed system. And Srila Prabhupada was once asked this question. He said it's sort of like in a school. Say, in a school, you have a certain number of students graduating each year and a certain number of students coming in. So if the number coming in equals the number graduating, then the population of the school will stay the same. But if students are held back, if they don't graduate, if they have to repeat a year or again and again and again, then, and you have the same number of students coming in, then the population is going to increase. So Srila Prabhupada was asked this question, why is it that the population of the earth is increasing, the human population? He said, because not enough souls and human bodies are going back home, back to Godhead. So therefore, you know, they have to take birth again and again in this material world. Therefore, the population's increasing. But in any case, because of the education system today, you know, many people, you know, don't understand these subtle laws of nature. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada wrote these books, not just because it's some interesting philosophy, but because this knowledge is actually necessary to save people from suffering in this material world. Janma mriti mujura vyadhi dukato shana darshana. An intelligent person will see this. So we're not just presenting some interesting knowledge, you know, to tickle people's minds, you know, with some interesting ideas. This knowledge is actually necessary to prevent people from suffering. This knowledge is actually necessary to help people attain, you know, the highest goal in life. So these books are the actual law books of this material world and of the spiritual world as well. And if people aren't aware of this knowledge, then they're going to suffer in many ways. So, you know, the Vaishnavas, they're compassionate, you know, upon the people of this age of Kali who are lost in ignorance. So they want to give them this knowledge so that they'll be properly aware of the choices that they're making. They'll be aware of the effects of the choices they make and how to live their lives. They'll be aware that, yes, if you eat meat, there's going to be a reaction. In your next life, you may have to take birth as an animal and be killed and eaten yourself. There are consequences to our actions. Of course, everybody knows this to some extent, but they don't realize the full extent of the consequences to their actions. So this is very important information for people to have, you know, so that they'll be aware not just of, you know, the laws of the state of California and, you know, the laws of the United States or the laws of other countries, but they'll be aware of all the laws that are going to have an effect on their life, including these subtle laws of karma and reincarnation, as we're learning here. So, does anybody have a question about this? Bhrigupati.
You're going to hell forever. And we think, you know, we criticize that as that's very unfair and God wouldn't operate like that. But, you know, couldn't they or somebody just turn around and say the same, level the same accusation against us in the sense that, well, you know, people get the human life, but for the most part, they don't know about Krishna consciousness. I mean, even though we've been distributing Prabhupada's books for 40 years now, we've hardly saturated the planet with Prabhupada's books. So somebody could say, well, you know, it's equally as unfair. Maybe you're not, somebody's not going to hell eternally, but as you said, there could be severe consequences. You know, they don't know anything about Krishna consciousness. Even here in America, there's still plenty of people you meet, they don't know Hare Krishna from a bar of soap. So, you know, there they are. They have the human body, but they're not really, they don't have the opportunity to know right from wrong. And of course, they're going to do the wrong things and they're going to suffer so much. So, you know, somebody could say, well, Krishna is very unfair because he's subjecting people to, you know, putting them in a situation where they really don't know they have a fair chance to do anything to improve themselves.
The fact that a person is put into a situation where they don't have this knowledge is the result of actions they've performed in their past life. It's not that Krishna is just denying them this knowledge. Because of activities they've performed in their past lives, because they've deliberately ignored, you know, this information in past lives, they may be put into a situation where they don't have that opportunity in this life. But that is not some whimsical activity on Krishna's part. That's a result of actions they performed in their past lives. And actually, Krishna, by appearing in the form of Lord Chaitanya in the age of Kali is actually giving causeless mercy. Now, the fact that the devotees are there spreading this knowledge, this is something that people don't deserve. They don't deserve it. It's like causeless mercy. So they're getting an advantage. They're getting something. The fact that the devotees are there going around giving people this knowledge, even though they don't deserve it, is special causeless mercy on the part of Krishna. Any other question on this? Okay, so some devotees have asked me to give a report on my tour of Russia. So I was going to do that today. Actually, I told Archer that once you've seen one picture of me giving a lecture, you know, pretty much all the same, but still the devotees insist, so I'll do that. So do we have the... Okay. So, first of all, why do I do these tours? It's because Srila Prabhupada said, Darwin's a rascal, what is his theory? We kick on your face, that's all. That is our philosophy. The more we kick on Darwin's face, the more advanced in spiritual consciousness. So we just trying to make some advancement in spiritual consciousness. And the basis of my preaching is books. You know, two of my books, Forbidden Archaeology and Human Devolution, have been published in Russian language. So that gives me the opportunity to preach there in a very systematic way. Okay. So, on this tour of Russia. I landed in Moscow here, and then went to a festival on the Black Sea, then went back to Moscow and did some lectures in that area, then went to Krasnodar here, then all the way across to Vladivostok, and then gradually worked my way all across Siberia, you know, back to St. Petersburg on the opposite side, and did some lectures in that area, and that was it. So you can see it's a pretty big country, very, very big country. So this is Krynitsa on the Black Sea, where the devotees in Russia hold an annual festival, and about 3,000 devotees come there, and we're going to see if we can run a video clip here. Okay, the video clip's not working, but they're about... Oops. The sound's not working. Oh, there it is. So it's a, yeah, it's a pretty amazing event. There's about 3,000 devotees that come there, and they spend about a week there. And I was really, you know, I'm kind of a fault finder. I was looking for some faults. I was looking for some conflict, some disagreement. But everybody was just chanting Hare Krishna, you know, hearing seminars from their spiritual masters or sannyasis or other devotees, taking prasadam, chanting, dancing, and it's like the spiritual world. It's very amazing. So then, yeah, I went back up north to the city of Rybinsk, which is on the Volga River. And this man is the one who organized all my lectures there. He's an atheist. But somehow or other, you know, he likes me and likes my work, so he arranged all kinds of lectures for me in Rybinsk. And he's kind of a friend of the devotees, too. He's kind of an interesting atheist. And I told him, well, Krishna says abandon all varieties of religion, so you can... this was a lecture at a university there. And, he told me at this particular university, there's a group of students. They call themselves the evil philosophers. And they say, they've told me they are going to come to this lecture and they're going to rip you apart. So the evil philosophers are, these are the kind of like teachers and professors here, and these are the evil philosophers. So I was kind of wondering, well, what are they going to do? But they actually liked the lecture very much. They all bought books. And they insisted on having their picture taken with me. So that was the evil philosophers. And then I gave a lecture at another university there. And at this university, they had a big debate among the people who run the university whether I should talk to the students and the professors, or just the professors. And because they were, they were figuring maybe the students, they weren't educated enough to defend themselves against, my teachings, against Darwinism. So they were kind of going back and forth. The last I actually heard was they were going to let me talk to the students and the professors. But when I got there, they only let me talk to the professors of the philosophy department. So that man there, he's the head of the philosophy department. The other people in the room, they're all professors of philosophy. In the end, he asked me a question. I was talking about my book, Human Devolution. And I was saying, a human being is not made of just chemicals. A human being is made of matter, mind, and consciousness. So he asked me, if people are made of matter, mind, and consciousness, then why are so many of the people in Russia so stupid? It was kind of like a joke. So I told him, Chartyevoz Nayat, that's Russian for the devil knows. And he really liked that answer. So that's so actually all of them, the head of the philosophy department and all the philosophy professors, they all bought books and they had them autographed. And again, they insisted on having a picture taken with me. And this was a public lecture in Rybinsk, and an interview with a newspaper reporter, and an interview with a radio talk show host. And for some reason, I don't know, they had this Confederate flag in the studio. I asked them about it. They said, well, we're rebels. And I said, well, so am I. So then it went to Moscow. Moscow is this huge city. It's like... So I talked on a national radio program there. The station is called Radio Mayak. Mayak means lighthouse. And I was on one of their most popular shows for an hour, and they said their audience is about 20 million people all over Russia. And people were calling in from all over Russia. So that was kind of a big media opportunity there. And then I was also interviewed by the third largest Russian television channel. It's called REN. And at one of the temples in Moscow, I had a meeting with researchers from an organization called Cosmopoisk. These are people who are into investigating, you know, things that, like UFOs and paranormal experiences. They like my work, and, you know, they want to meet with me and film a television program with me, which they did at this temple. It's called the Botanicheskaya Temple because it's near some botanical gardens. And yeah, it's a very interesting temple. It's really geared towards young people, professionals like that. So about 150 young professional people, you know, came to hear, you know, a lecture at that temple. And then I also spoke at the Russian People's Friendship University at the History Department. And I was invited to speak at the Moscow Writers Club, you know, which was a very prestigious organization for authors there. And the devotees in Moscow, they have, some of them, they run a restaurant called Ganga. It's in a big shopping center. And they have really nice prasadam. They actually have good pizza there. Good pizza is hard to find in Russia because the devotees, they kind of make a Russian kind of pizza with peas and corn and cottage cheese and things on. So if you want some real Italian pizza, you know, you have to go to Ganga. And this is a house I stayed in Moscow. This is not how the average devotee lives in Russia. You know, mostly they live in apartment flats, you know, flats and big apartment buildings, you know, built, many of them built during the communist times. But, yeah, this devotee, he's kind of in the real estate property management business, and he's fairly well off, but he's a really nice devotee. That's his daughter. You know, she's been to India twice, to Vrindavan twice, and they're very nice, you know, devotees. And on the left in the sari is the lady of the house. And they had a Namahat program where they invited, you know, people of kind of like similar background, you know, to hear a lecture. And traffic in Moscow is really heavy. So there was one devotee, you know, he was driving me, you know, from central Moscow to the place where I was staying. And to try to save some time, he drove in a lane that's reserved for the autobuses, for the buses. So the police stopped him. This isn't the actual policeman, but this is what a Russian traffic policeman looks like. And I could understand some Russian, so I could understand what you know, the conversation between the devotee and the policeman. So the policeman said, you know, you were driving in the autobus lane. And the devotee said, well, honestly, I didn't know. I had no idea. And the policeman said, everybody says that. So he's continuing to write this huge ticket for 300 rubles or something. And then the devotee said, but I'm driving the famous American author, Michael Cremo. You know, he's world famous. And he's written books like Forbidden Archaeology and Human Devolution. And the policeman said, I'm sorry, I haven't heard of those books. And then the devotee said, but I live in a temple. I'm very poor. I have no money. I just live on donations that people give. And the policeman said, me too. So finally, policeman just said, okay, go, get out of here, you know. So then, you know, I went to Krasnodar, you know, back in the south, you know, in the Black Sea. And there's this devotee there who's at a university. And the university pays him to give lectures on healthy lifestyles, like vegetarianism and, you know, meditation and, you know, avoiding alcohol and drugs and things like that. It's, I mean, he can't openly in the lectures, you know, present, you know, Krishna consciousness. But, you know, the people, the students who, you know, are really into this and who, you know, he lets them know, you know, privately and, about Krishna consciousness. But he's paid by the university to do this, so it's very interesting. And he had me give lectures in his classes at the university there. And the students, they really liked the books. And he's working with another devotee to open up a vegetarian restaurant in the university where they'll distribute prasadam, which is kind of amazing. And then there were some public lectures there, and I also spoke at the temple there. And then I flew across the whole country to Vladivostok, which is on the Sea of Japan. And it's a big naval base, sort of like San Francisco or a place like that. So it's way off on the eastern side of Russia. And I had an interview with a newspaper reporter there. They took pictures. Also spoke at the temple. This is a lecture at a high school for gifted children, for children with IQs that are kind of off the charts, kind of. And it was one of the most amazing places I've ever been. And really bright students, and they really liked the presentation. Mostly I was speaking about my book, Human Devolution, A Vedic Alternative to Darwin's Theory. And the books were for sale, but everybody got a free copy of the Origins magazine, which is published in the Russian language there. And they made me an honorary teacher at the school. So I can... And then I spoke at an engineering school. I kind of like this guy in the front here. Pay close attention. And this is the director of the school. And I asked him, well, don't you get in trouble with your colleagues for inviting me to come and make this presentation against Darwinism and talk about evidence for reincarnation and all this stuff? And he said, well, I'm the director of the institute, so nobody can tell me what to do. I can invite whoever I like. And he really likes stuff like this. He's very interesting. And this is a householder couple. And they have very interesting prasadam there. They had a lot of sushi kinds of things, like rice wrapped in seaweed and all these kinds of things because of the Japanese influence. And this was a public lecture in Vladivostok. It's held in a big auditorium in the center of the city. And the devotees had put up billboards all over the city. I mean, not just little posters, but billboards, around the city. So it was a packed lecture. And actually I gave two lectures there. One lecture was on forbidden archaeology. The other was on human devolution, a Vedic alternative to Darwin's theory. And both of them were packed. It was really amazing. Then I went to Irkutsk, which is a city in Siberia. And I gave a public lecture there in the auditorium of the Russian Academy of Sciences. And again, it was a packed lecture. And this is an interview with a reporter. And then there was a devotee event. Like, there's just so many devotees in Russia, and even in these very out-of-the-way places like Irkutsk. They had 500 devotees come to an auditorium. They have regular meetings. And this was kind of like their holy name day. So they were, chanting Hare Krishna for 3 hours, having a feast and things like that. But there was about 500 devotees from the Irkutsk region, that came there. And this was a public lecture. And then from there I went to Barnaul, which is a city further west in Siberia. And I gave some lectures there. One lecture I gave was about my book, Divine Nature, A Spiritual Perspective on the Environmental Crisis, which has also been published in Russian. And this particular lecture was attended by government people, scientists who are interested in environmental questions and things like that. these are some of the devotees who were taking care of me there. This little girl was always checking to see if I was chanting my rounds properly. And then I went to Omsk, and this is the devotee who was accompanying me, you know, for most of the tour of Russia, translating and things like that. His name is Mavan. Very intelligent devotee, very wired. He's got 5 cell phones, all wired together, talking to each other. I mean, he's a real genius like that. You know, this is the temple there, some of the devotees. This is a lecture at a university there. And I always try to tell a few jokes, you know, keep people happy. And as everywhere, the students, they bought books, had them autographed. It's on the way to the next engagement. This was a public lecture. And again, most of the public lectures were in fairly big halls, and almost always there were just hundreds of people attending. And this devotee who's introducing me there, her name is Gaurapriya. She's the wife of the temple president, but she's also a local television personality. She has a very popular television show, so the whole city kind of knows her. And the lectures were very successful. Lots of books were sold. Sometimes people tell me my books are a little bit hard to understand. Like this. They got the book upside down. But I'm happy if the devotees just chant Hare Krishna. They don't have to understand. But also at these events, Prabhupada's books are also on sale. And that's the whole idea, is to attract people to Krishna consciousness, to Prabhupada's books. And at this event, they also had prasadam and all kinds of nice sweets and other things. And these are the devotees who organized that event. And they all seemed to think it was a big success. Very enthusiastic. I gave some lectures at the temple. Sometimes I had to give them in Western dress, because right after the morning program, I'd be going to a lecture. This devotee, Gaurapriya, used her contacts in the media to arrange a huge press conference. And there were about 30 reporters there from radio, TV, newspapers, magazines. So it was a pretty amazing event. And a lot of the reporters bought books and got them signed. And that's Gaurapriya again. And then I had a lecture at the science department of the government university there. During the lecture, I'm always kind of looking at the people in the crowd, and I saw this one professor. I thought, boy, he's going to be trouble. because he was just kind of sitting there with this big frown on his face and clenching his fist. But I actually misjudged him. He actually liked the lecture very much. He bought books. Said thank you very much. This is another temple lecture, and this is another public lecture. And as always, people bought lots of books, and I was very impressed with how seriously the devotees took my lectures and presence there. These are the devotees who organized the lecture. The thing you have to put up with in Russia is the huge quantities of prasadam. I'm signing books for all the devotees who helped organize the lectures in this city. And then, you know, we got in a train. Mostly I was traveling by train, you know, from city to city. Then went to Tumen in Siberia. And I spoke at the biology department of the Tumen Government University. This is really quite significant because last year when I went to Tumen, you know, there were professors from the history department who invited me to speak. And they arranged a lecture for me, but at the last minute, the president of the university canceled the lecture you know, because of pressure from outside organizations who didn't like the fact that I'm a member of the Hare Krishna movement, that I'm against evolution, things like that. So what happened was is that these professors, they went to the director of the local branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences, and they told him the situation, and he said, well, he can speak here. Nobody will put any pressure on me. So I spoke there last year, and they had buses that brought professors and students from the university to this lecture. And the professors told me more professors and students came than would have come if the lecture had been held at the university, because they were all talking at the university about, who is this guy? Why did they cancel his lecture? You know, they... So this year I came back and I lectured at the university in the biology department, no problem. So I guess they decided it's better to let me speak than try to stop me. So there were, you know, the students there really liked, you know, the lecture. This is a public lecture in the same city. These are some of the devotees who arranged the programs. You know, I spoke at a very popular radio show, and kind of the guy, there were two people interviewing me. I don't know if you've ever seen X-Files, but one is like Agent Scully, who's like the skeptic. You know, like the lady, she was kind of playing the part of the skeptic, and the guy who actually hosts the show is, he was very positive, very positive. And I also did some television shows there, of course, lectures at the temple. This is another public... No, this is a lecture at another university. And it was so full that, you know, there were students standing in the hallways, you know, trying to hear what was going on. And when I was there, one of the devotees has a little country house in a village out there. So this is what Siberia looks like in the wintertime there. And sauna. Now, all this isn't like fun and games. You know, it may seem like fun, but actually, you know, I had a little bit of bronchitis in Russia, and they gave me some doctors gave me some antibiotics, and I was allergic to the antibiotics. So my whole body turned red, you know, with spots like that, it itched like anything. You know, so I had to. So there's some austerities involved in, you know, preaching. It's not all fun and games and things like that. So then I went to Perm, and this was a public lecture there. And then from there I went to Nizhny Novgorod, did some television interviews, and I spoke at the philosophy department of the university there. And then went by train to St. Petersburg. You know, these are the devotees. They were chanting as the train was leaving the station. And St. Petersburg is second biggest city in Russia. It's the center. It's considered to be like the cultural and intellectual center of Russia. So he had gone all the way across the whole country. And you know, I spoke at a philosophy conference at the University of St. Petersburg. And a big Russian philosopher had a question for me. You see how big he is? I mean, I'm not a small guy myself, but yes. So he was big in many ways. And, you know, this is the university. It's a very important university. This is like the law school there. And practically the whole government of Russia went to law school at this university. The president, Medvedev, the prime minister, Putin, almost all their cabinet ministers. And So there's, you know, a devotee who's going to law school there at this university. And I told him, probably, you know, the next president of Russia or, you know, like future president of Russia is your classmate. You know, so, of course, Lenin, you know, who was, you know, leader of the communist revolution, he went to law school there too. I spoke at the main library, the head library there. It was another huge lecture, completely packed, you know, people standing in the hallways, you know, nice questions from people, and lots of people bought books. And when I was in St. Petersburg, I stayed at the home of this, well, this flat owned by a young devotee businessman. And you know, he's single, and he's got some brahmacharis that live there. But they have a Namahat program where they get about 40 to 50 very young, intelligent people coming, you know, from most of them university students or young professionals. So, you know, they came to hear, like a talk, and it was very nice young people. And this is me leading kirtan in the snow in St. Petersburg. These are the devotees. And we can, there's a little film clip here. Russian Vaishnavis, they have all the moves. So we have better conditions for chanting here, so we can, you know, take advantage of that. And the last stop was a city called Vladimir, where a devotee is a professor at a university there. He's a professor of philosophy, and he arranges every year a conference on Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita. And this is him. His name is Abhinanda. He's actually a professor at a university of the Justice Ministry in Russia, which has to do with the courts and the prisons and things like that. So they wear uniforms. So he's kind of like a major or a colonel or something like that. But he's also a professor of philosophy. That's Mahavan again. And these devotees, they really took a lot of organization to, you know, pull off this tour. So they did very well. And yeah, I did some TV interviews there. And then I had a meeting with some of the devotee scholars. And then before coming back to L.A., I went to Dubai to speak at an alternative history conference. And they have this mall there in Dubai where they have a ski slope inside the mall. It's like creating an illusion within the illusion within the illusion of the material world. But it's pretty amazing. It's got real snow, a ski lift, a Swiss village. And you can see people snowboarding down the slope. You know, it's like about a 400-meter slope. You know, pretty amazing. And I had to tolerate this kind of thing. But I'm very happy to be back. I'm very happy to be back sleeping on the floor in my room here in L.A. Okay. Hari Bol. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.